Cicero once said, "In all matters, before beginning, a diligent preparation should be made."
Ladies and gentlemen, the voice of the Army.
The United States Army brings you a story of the Air Engineers, titled Ready for Anything. This transcribed feature is another in the series of
The Voice of the Army. Kipling once wrote that the first engineer was Noah, and that the first pontoon was the Ark. According to the orders that Noah received, specifications stated that
the length of the ark shall be 300 cubits, the breadth of it 50 cubits, and the height of it 30 cubits.
And the purpose of the ark was said to be for protection from the angry flood of waters from the earth when it rained for 40 days and 40 nights. However, our story takes place about 4,000 years later. And although it concerns neither Noah nor the Ark, it does concern engineers.
It is the latter part of 1941, and the 5th Regiment Combat Engineers is undergoing final training maneuvers at Fort Belvoir, Virginia.
You want to attend, Colbert?
Let's see. Sergeant Barker, Son Zaleski, Corporal Salafank, fine.
All right, men. All right, men. We've just got our orders to construct a pontoon bridge across Accotink Creek. Now, here are the details. The bridge is to be 190 feet long. Heavy pontoons will be used. Now, each of you, open the map that Sergeant Warwick has given you. The northwest abutment will be secured at location 58.03-25.10. The southeast abutment will be at 59.00-25.01. The normal time for completing a bridge of this type would be from 8 to 12 hours, depending upon conditions. But we must have this one completed in 7 hours. Now, we've just got about 15 minutes to get things ready before we start on our assignment. And as you know, this will be our last job here at Fort Belvoir.
Then where do we go, Lieutenant Holbrook?
Well, it wouldn't surprise me at all if we were to find ourselves in Iceland in a few weeks. However, don't quote me.
In September 1941, the 5th Combat Engineers left Fort Belvoir to put the experience of their long months of training into practical use. Meanwhile, boasting among its personnel some of the men who had trained with the 5th at Fort Belvoir, the 846th Engineer Battalion Aviation was preparing for a slightly different type of job at Geiger Field, Spokane, Washington. And in December 1942, 1 year after Pearl Harbor, the battalion stood at ease while its commanding officer, Lieutenant Colonel Charles A. Armstrong, spoke to his men.
Men, this will be my final talk to you until we embark for overseas. I want you to know that I'm proud of you. For my money, you men are the best engineers in the United States Army, and that means in the whole world. You're not only engineers, you're combat engineers. And you're not only combat engineers, you are aviation engineers. In addition to the customary training which makes engineers, you've learned how to cope with the peculiarities of airfield construction. You've learned that aircraft runways must be more sturdy than motor highways because of the shock loads they must support from landing bombers and fighters. And you've learned how to build them. You've learned about the drainage problems concerned with the construction of airfields. And there are many other things which you've learned, such as constructing temporary hangars and the fundamentals of camouflage. But it's hardly necessary for me to mention the many other things which you have learned to do. You know what they are. You know how to do them. I know that you'll do them well. I just want to remind you that the eyes of the world will be watching us. They will be watching us because we are members of an arm that is new in military history, one that has never been battle-tested in any other war. And I'm confident that when our task is finally completed, that world which is watching us will regard us warmly, because we will have done our job just as efficiently and victoriously as the infantry, the artillery, and the cavalry, whose glorious histories extend back through many centuries. That's all, men. When you fall out, report to your quarters. Get all your equipment ready. We leave here in 1 hour.
In January 1943, the 846th Aviation Engineers arrived at Birch, near Colchester, England, where they immediately began to construct an aerodrome modeled upon one which already was in operation at Burtonwood near Warrington, and which was then the largest Air Corps supply depot in Europe. Then, when the field was nearly finished...
Miss Mantle?
Yes, Major Madison.
The colonel won't be back from Watford until tomorrow, and I just got a phone call from post headquarters telling me that Colonel Scott, the commanding officer of Burtonwood, just flew in from White Wing on his way north. He'll probably stop over here to tell us how he likes the field. Will you call me as soon as he arrives?
Oh, but I may not be here. It's nearly time for my tea.
Miss Mantle, can't you let your tea wait just a little while until we learn whether he's coming or not?
But does that seem quite fair, really? I don't mind working late sometimes, you know, and I never complain when you ask me to come in a little bit early, but I simply must have my tea on time or it affects my appetite. And I can't have that, you know.
But I'll send someone for your tea, anything. Just be here if he gets here. Corporal Kohler, will you please go and bring Miss Mantle her tea?
Her tea? Yes, sir. Right away.
And please do not spoil it by putting cream or sugar in it.
No cream, no sugar. Right.
I can never understand why you people always run around and get so excited over every little thing. May I help you?
I'm Colonel Scott from Burtonwood. I'd like to see Major Patterson, if I may. Major William J. Patterson, Jr. I understand he's the executive officer of the 846.
Oh, yes, Colonel Scott. I'll tell him you're here.
Thank you.
You wait here just a minute, please. Colonel Scott is here, Major Patterson.
Oh, fine. Hello, Colonel Scott. We've been expecting you.
Hello, Major Patterson. I'm on my way back to Burtonwood and just thought I'd stop in for a moment and look over your new field. It's beautiful. And it couldn't look more like Burtonwood if you'd built it in Lancashire.
The colonel will be glad to hear that when he gets back from Watford.
Major, I was looking across the field from the control tower. It felt almost as if I was seeing hangars 4 and 5 at Mary Ann's site. That's one of the camp sites at Burtonwood. I think you've really done a wonderful job here, Major. You've certainly proved that the aviation engineers know their business.
Thank you, sir.
Major, yesterday I thought that I had the finest airfield in England, but today I can see that it's only one of the finest.
The aviation engineers were fast proving that they knew their business. In May 1944, the 9th Engineer Command was organized. It was composed of 26 fully trained and equipped battalions of aviation engineers and came under the direct command of USTAF, headquarters of Lieutenant General Carl Spotts. That was in May. Then, in June, D-Day, the chips were down. Allied planes crossing the English Channel eastward rivaled the spectacle of winging geese in their annual exodus to the south. But these planes needed landing fields on the continent, and it was the job of the aviation engineers to prepare these fields. Day and night they worked, sometimes under fire, always under pressure, and they worked hard. They worked for their lives. They worked for our lives.
Sergeant Houston, are your men ready to move on?
Yes, sir, Colonel Patterson. The metal strips are all down. One fighter plane's already landed on the field.
Good. Then we'll move out right away. Our next landing strip will be laid 75 kilometers north of here.
I'll get the men ready right away, sir.
Across France and into Belgium they went, carving out of the European continent landing strips for Allied aircraft.
There, that's finished. That makes 51 of these landing strips worked on by our battalion alone. 52. How many more of these things do we have to build before we win this war? 53, and still going strong. 54.
Yes, 54 landing strips for fighter planes were worked on by the 846th alone. And there were 25 other battalions of aviation engineers who also were busy in the field. But it will not be forgotten that the nuclei of these battalions were largely comprised of or trained by former members of the 5th Engineer Combat Regiment. After arriving in England from Iceland, the 5th became the 1128th Engineer Combat Group Headquarters and the 1278th Engineer Battalion, and contributed significantly toward preparing the Allied path across France, through Belgium and Holland, and into Germany. At the town of Maastricht, Holland, they had finished, 13 days after receiving the order, a 600-foot bridge across the Meuse River, on which they hung a sign which read, "Built by the 1278th Engineer Battalion, dedicated to the 5th Engineers." Colonel Reinhardt, commanding the 1128th, made the dedication speech.
"Men, you have just constructed the largest fixed bridge of its type ever built by any army in actual combat. I am proud of you. Your commanding general is proud of you. We are proud of you not only because you are here exhibiting a formidable example of military engineering, but also because of your overall record of other achievements. We have also received some very gratifying reports on the accomplishments of various battalions of aviation engineers, many of whose ablest men once worked side by side with some of you, and who at that time you trained to the best of your conscience and capability to do the work in which they are now glorifying their country and confirming your ability. In some instances during their training period, you were confronted with engineering problems which were unprecedented in military history. But recent events have proved that the quality of your judgment was not wanting. This is the initial military conflict in which the employment of separate organizations of aviation engineers has been adopted. And you, who in any way helped prepare some of these men for their ultimate duties, may well point with pride to that fact. You have been instrumental in proving that your own training has been thorough and that you can cope with a situation which is subject to change at any time. In short, you have proved that, as always, the United States Army is ready for anything."
Choosing a career is no longer a problem for the high school graduate. If you want education, advancement, and years of achievement, you belong in the United States Army. Specialists are needed for research, production, supply, maintenance, and other related activities. The Army is ready to train you for these jobs. The training you will get in the Army's technical schools will be of the finest, and the experience you will gain on the job will develop your abilities and understanding to the fullest. Find out whether you can qualify for the United States Army. Visit your local Army recruiting sergeant, and he will be glad to offer you friendly, considerate advice and will show you why thousands of alert, intelligent, ambitious young men are saying,
"It's smart to join up."
Yes, and it's smart to stay in.
Choose this fine profession now.
This program was brought to you by the United States Army and featured Norman Rose, Frank Richards, Jim Bowles, and Miss Carol Summers. The story was written by Staff Sergeant Robert C.C. McCann and was directed by Major Phil Lampkin. This is Sidney Paul speaking.
This transcribed feature has been another in the series of The Voice of the Army.